Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Josh Fox was offered about $100,000 for the drilling rights to his family land in Pennsylvania. That got him asking questions, which led to his Oscar-nominated film Gasland, which came out in 2010. For many people, Gasland was the spark that led them to question an industry claiming clean and safe technology that would make the U.S. energy independent. The film was so popular that the energy industry began a PR campaign to discredit it and funded the film Truthland. Now Josh Fox is out with a sequel called Gasland Part 2, which will premiere nationally on HBO on July 8th. And Gasland Part 2 explores not only how fracking has changed people's lives over the last several years, but also how it has affected our democracy and what people are doing about it. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for joining us. Let me get a little of your biography out here. You're the director and producer of Gasland Part 2. Your first feature film, Gasland, was nominated for the 2011 Academy Award for Best Documentary, and it won the 2011 Emmy for Best Nonfiction Directing. Josh is a national spokesman on the issues of the contamination resulting from fossil fuel extraction. So, Josh, for people who haven't yet seen Gasland Part 1, can you take us back on that original journey of making that film? It was you kind of trying to understand what fracking was, its consequences, and how it's literally changing the landscape of the United States. So go back and take us on that initial journey.
Sure. Well, you did a really good job of summing it up right before me. But basically, I had never had any concerns with natural gas, with drilling. Where my family's land is in the Upper Delaware River Basin, which is part of the watershed that provides water to about 16 million people. That's the combined reservoirs of New York City, which are upstate of New York City, about 110 miles upstate, and the Delaware River that emanates out of them. And people, you know, all throughout New York City and Philadelphia and southern New Jersey get their water for the cities from that area, which is a pristine area. It's a very, very beautiful place. And so we'd never had any encounters with extractive industry before, unlike a lot of places in the U.S., where, for example, they'd done coal mining or oil drilling or something like that. So when, in 2008, I was actually going door-to-door in PA for the Obama campaign in the Pennsylvania primary. And around the same time, we were receiving letters in the mail about gas drilling, about leasing our land. And those offers ranged between, you know, $3,000 an acre up to $6,000 an acre and having about 19 and a half acres. That was in the neighborhood of $100,000 initially signing, and then, of course, some piece of the royalties of the gas that you know, would follow. At the same time, I'm starting to hear all this stuff about fracking, and what is fracking? I've never heard the word fracking before. And neighbors of mine got very organized because everybody was, you know, in the middle of this, what was a controversy that sort of landed in the backyard overnight. And as I'm going door to door talking to people, they all want to know about fracking and what is Obama's position about fracking. And, you know, there starts to be a real division between people who want the money and people who are looking at this from an environmental perspective going, wow, this is a heavy industrial drilling campaign that injects chemicals into the ground to break up a shale formation, the Marcellus Shale. And release gas. And looking at pictures of this happening in Wyoming, you see these moonscapes just dotted with well pads as far as you can see, and that the density of this drilling is actually you have to drill at scale. And then I saw you know, some videos of someone out in western Pennsylvania, I think, who had little gas running in their streams and the freshwater springs that were connecting to their farms, and I just started to freak out because it was like, well, wait a minute. The gas industry is telling me all this is going to be fine, and it's just a fire hydrant in the middle of your field because the wellhead looks a little bit like a fire hydrant, and you're hardly going to know we're here. We might not even drill. It's free money. Just take it. All these things that they were saying to promote the idea of people leasing. On the other hand, neighbors of mine who were rapidly becoming environmentalists were pointing out all of these problems. And I set out initially to try to get the story straight and make basically an educational video, something on YouTube for 5 minutes, you know, that was going to go into the process of fracking so that people got some information. I'm a theater director. I've been doing that all my life. and I had made one previous feature film called Memorial Day, but I'd never made a documentary before. But I thought, well, you know, if I was so interested in this that I wanted to go out and explore it. I quickly figured out that this was not going to be a 5-minute YouTube video.
Indeed not. This is going to put you on a lifetime quest.
Well, you know, that's the way things happen. You just get a knock at the door, and then all of a sudden, you know, things change. But I went to a nearby town called Dimmock, which was about 60 miles away in the Susquehanna River Basin, where they were already doing drilling. And what I found there, and it was a very hard place to find. You had to kind of go. There was no direct route to it. You had to go through all these back roads. And then sort of I arrived in this town, and there were Halliburton trucks swarming everywhere. There were drill pads everywhere. People who I was talking to were very concerned. Their children were getting sick. Their animals were getting sick. Their water quality had changed drastically. In some places, their water had turned black in the washing machine. And one of the residents in this town, their water well exploded, spontaneously combusted on New Year's morning in 2009. And then all of a sudden people realized that they could light their water on fire. And when that happened, they had to disconnect all their water wells because their houses could explode. I mean, of these several people who this was occurring to. And the drilling company that was in the area started to be very aggressive in denying that they had any issue here. The company said, no, this is not our fault. You have naturally occurring methane. You've always had methane in your water. And it was a state of shock for me because these people who were in the middle of, you know, central PA, were not particularly garrulous types, were starting to speak out and talk about what had happened to them. And these people had signed and leased for about $50 an acre when the gas company came and they offered people, you know, very, very little money to do this. And then their whole town was overturned and taken over. And at that point, I realized I had seen enough and I had learned enough that I wasn't going to do this. That fracking itself, which is, again, drilling deep down to this shale formation, in Pennsylvania's case, 8,000 feet down, then these well bores actually turn. They're horizontal drilling. So you can drill out from where you initially sink the well in the ground 2 miles all the way out underneath other people's property. And then that well bore is injected with water at 7 to 9 million gallons per well, per frack. And then the fracking fluids that they put down into the well to do various things along the process, they're biocides, they are petroleum distillates, they're control agents. And those things are carcinogenic. A lot of them are neurotoxins. And I discovered that some people had done research on these chemicals and found out what they were.
Can I just butt in really quickly? The industry does not have to disclose what the actual mix of the chemicals is because they're considered trade secrets, correct?
Well, that's right. And in 2005, the Bush-Cheney government passed a law called the Energy Policy Act. In that law, there was one page about hydraulic fracturing in which it exempted the practice from the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Josh, I think this is really important. The 2005 Energy Policy Act exempted hydraulic fracturing specifically from the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act?
Not the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. The Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, there are already oil and gas exemptions to those two laws. So oil and gas has a way of getting into our government and changing the rules for them that everybody else has to follow. But they had no exemption to the Safe Drinking Water Act. Safe Drinking Water Act basically says if you're going to inject toxic material into the ground, you need to get a permit from EPA. Well, hydraulic fracturing injects toxic material into the ground, so it's very important for them to go ahead and do this to get exempt from that basic law. So, yes, all those chemicals that they are using, and we have charted now about 900 of them, and the majority of which have serious, serious health effects, have all that has been exempted from the Safe Drinking Water Act by an act of Congress that was pushed forward by Dick Cheney and his energy task force. And it was one page in a 1,000-page bill that allowed this practice to go on unregulated by the EPA and by the Safe Drinking Water Act. So, yes, the gas industry all over America and the oil industry, when they're doing fracking, they can inject toxic material into the ground in huge volumes and not report it to anyone. And those chemicals are proprietary in many cases. So they can do that. They're exempt from the law. And all this information was leading me to the understanding. And of course, when I went to Dimmock, that I wasn't going to lease. But what I wanted to find out was how widespread these problems were. Was Dimmick the exception or the rule? You know, was it some drilling company that had come in and done a bad job, and then all of a sudden people's water was contaminated and their lives were taken over? And so I set out across America to figure this out, because I found out that, you know, drilling in these new shale plays, which they've discovered, these vast areas of shale and fracking that had basically opened them up since 2005, was now happening in 34 states across America, and that we were in the largest domestic natural gas drilling campaign in history. And that it wasn't just me getting a knock at the door, or more my neighbors getting a knock at the door, but this was happening to millions and millions of people. The Marcellus Shale is half of New York State, three quarters of Pennsylvania, half of Ohio, all of West Virginia, parts of Tennessee and parts of Maryland. It's a huge, long formation. And in California, you have something called the Monterey Shale, which is also vast and enormous, and that's fracking for oil. And it's they're calling it the largest oil shale play in America. So California right now is in the position that I was 4 or 5 years ago. We have an invasive industrial industry going after a huge amount of territory, with people on the ground having very little information about this. I mean, once it takes over your area, or once this proposal comes to your area, everybody in that spot, in that place, knows what fracking is. It's like you see the most intense level of study among the citizenship about how they're going to process this invasion. And so, you know, in California, we're at the very, very dawn of that, which is why we wanted to tour Gasland to California, because 4 years ago when we did Gasland, people had no idea what was happening. And it's really like you're living in two different countries. Inside the shale plays and outside the shale plays, people's priorities are entirely different. Outside, you know, you don't think about it, and then inside, you're spending a huge amount of your time processing, you know, what's happening and fighting off the industry.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Our guest is Josh Fox. He's the director and producer of Gasland Part 2. His first feature film, Gasland, was nominated for the 2011 Academy Award for Best Documentary, and he's a national spokesman on the issues of contamination resulting from fossil fuel extraction. You can see Gasland Part 2 in Monterey on June 1st, at Stanford on June 2nd, in Oakland on June 2nd, and in Santa Cruz on June 3rd. All of that information is at yourcallradio.org. And tomorrow, activists against fracking, Californians Against Fracking, is launching a statewide campaign to pressure Governor Jerry Brown to ban fracking in California. That's tomorrow, Thursday, May 30th at noon. Again, all of that information will be at yourcallradio.org. And Josh, I just wanted to have you respond to the natural gas industry, which says that fracking promotes energy independence, cleaner energy, job creation, which you've seen. Obviously, that's a big draw for a lot of people who are either leasing their land or seeing, say, in North Dakota, this huge boom in jobs, et cetera. And then President Obama, in his 2012 State of the Union address, announced his support of extracting natural gas from shale. He said the development of natural gas will create jobs and power trucks and factories that are cleaner and cheaper, proving that we don't have to choose between our environment and our economy.
Yeah, there's a lot to respond to, but that very speech starts off Gasland 2, and it was very, very disappointing and dismaying to hear President Obama, who I have been a supporter of and still am in many, many ways, running off natural gas industry talking points in the middle of the State of the Union address, which are completely untrue. Let me say that this, when you're talking about jobs, the natural gas industry creates vastly fewer jobs than if you were to do some other kind of energy development that was more clean and healthy, like renewable energy. But I'll just point to the fact that John Hanger, who was the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, who is now running for governor in Pennsylvania, pointed out recently that Pennsylvania is 50th in job creation right now, when we've got the most booming natural gas industry in the whole Northeast, right? So the claims of natural gas jobs are very, very much inflated. And those numbers are coming directly from industry, whereas there have been a lot of independent economists who have taken a look at this and go, wait a minute, these numbers don't add up. They're doing things like counting new jobs every time the well crew moves to another location. So you've had a job for 3 weeks, and then it ceases to exist, and then you move to the next one, and you have another job for 3 weeks, and that's all of a sudden a whole other set of jobs. But if you look at what's actually happening, this is a boom and bust economy. These oil companies, which are the same players as all the oil companies that we've ever known, from BP to Shell to Chevron to Exxon, come in and they say, well, this is about American energy independence. Well, that's not true. What we're doing with this oil and with this gas is the big, big plan here is to export the gas overseas. Ernest Moniz, the new Department of Energy secretary, just confirmed, two multi-billion dollar liquefied natural gas ports. So they're actually creating pipelines and ports to put this gas, liquefy it, put it on barges, and send it overseas. The real plan here is to do the same thing that the oil industry has done forever. Extract resources in one place, exploit that place, and significantly degrade quality of life, degrade the environment, degrade public health, leave behind a wrecked, ruined place, and then find the highest bidder for their product of hydrocarbons, which is basically like turning Pennsylvania into Nigeria. The idea that this is about America is a PR claim. When you're talking about multinational oil companies that will go ahead and take that resource and consider the people in those areas and everything else in those areas, by the way, not just the people, but the previous economy, tourism, agriculture, whatever you might have in that area, will be destroyed by this. They will take their resource, claim jobs, go ahead and influence the government, put a lot of pressure on elected officials, and then develop what is a third world exploitation economy in those areas and ship that.
Josh, I want to get to some of the six. Go ahead. I want to get to some of the success
stories.
In terms
of those claims, what I'm hearing in that, and everybody who's listening has probably seen a commercial for BP after the oil spill, a commercial for American energy independence and gas drilling. That's because what they're trying to do is make this sound like something other than it is. It's a very, very old story. When you sign on the dotted line for these companies to come in, they're in charge at that point. Their rights supersede your rights as a landowner. They can go in and drill and industrialize that area to the point to which it's unrecognizable from what it previously was. So, as a person who's witnessed the natural gas industry coming to my door, to my neighborhood, with extraordinarily deceitful pitches, and then seeing across the country, as I found in Gasland, not an exceptional situation in this small town of Pennsylvania, endemic that I was talking about before, but par for the course. Everywhere I went, water contamination, air pollution, health problems, a sense that people had lost control of their communities, lost control of the basic character of the places that they love, and just an incredible amount of tragedy and resiliency. Americans, just normal people fighting the largest corporations ever in the history of corporations, incredibly inspiring. At the same time, totally confusing. Here we are in the 21st century. We're developing all these new forms of energy. These new forms of energy it's the wind and the sun and the water, which can power everything in our country. We have those resources, and here we are turning over vast sections of the United States to multinational oil companies to do an exploitation-based economy, boom and bust. There's a short period of economic activity, and then that region is devastated because the water quality has gone down, the air quality, which I can talk about in a moment, has been degraded because the well pads steam off with volatile organic compounds 24 hours a day. That's the gas. That's the BTEX, benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, xylene. Those are very dangerous chemicals that are coming up out of the ground that are now floating around in the atmosphere. So it's like one of those situations where you really have to read the fine print and you can't believe the hype. But it's very, very unfortunate. And that's why I made Gasland too, because I heard President Obama and other governors, Ed Rendell, Democrats, going out there and not being informed about this. And here was this crisis. Fracking is a household word. It's hugely controversial. Why hasn't our government stepped up to do anything about it? That's what I wanted to investigate next.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Josh Fox is the creator of the Oscar-nominated documentary Gasland and the soon-to-be-released sequel Gasland Part 2. There are local screenings. You can find all of that information at yourcallradio.org. And I want to invite our listeners to talk with Josh Fox and raise questions that you have about fracking. You can give us a call at 866-798-TALK. If you saw Josh's first film, Gasland, how did it affect you and how you think about fracking? And what do you think is the government's responsibility to regulate this form of oil and gas extraction? Should California ban fracking until we have regulations and studies in effect? Give us a call at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. I especially want to invite our South Bay listeners who are near the Monterey Shale to give us a call and let us know what your questions are about fracking in California, 866-798-8255. You can also email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Josh, we'll get to success stories that you've chronicled after the break. We're going to go to a break in just a couple of minutes, but I was just wondering, how have things changed since your first movie raised so much awareness about fracking and frankly put a target on your back from the industry? How have the industry's tactics changed? How have the PR campaigns changed? And have more people become fractivists?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the reason why I'm on tour and going with the film to Monterey and Santa Cruz and Oakland is because, you know, we grew up showing 10 minutes, I mean, the film grew up, you know, showing 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, you know, along the side of the Delaware River at a community center, you know, wherever we could do it. And that activist movement or fractivist movement, which I love to call it, you know, really brought us to a place where people knew what was going on. And what I've seen is everywhere this industry goes, there's a equal and opposite reaction. People are mobilized, they're organized, they become well-versed in all the science of this. They get really amazingly involved in creating this new form of democracy, which is to go out there and try to figure out how a community can stop the gas industry from coming in. So, you know, the film, the first film, Gasland, I toured it to 250 cities across America. That took a year and a half. It was amazing. I know this country and I know its backbone as a result, and it's my favorite thing to do. Going out with Gasland 2, HBO has said, all right, well, go ahead and tour it. And I said, well, can we please tour it before it goes on TV? And they said yes. So it's an enormous opportunity here to be with communities, meet with people, talk, answer questions, show the film. And that's the inspiring part of all of this. You know, the reaction from people is just unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it. There's an anti-fracking organization in every tiny small town across the entire southern tier of New York State. Very much the same is true for Pennsylvania. You're watching people understand what this is, fight it off, and take a look at this in a historical sense and in a wider sense and say, this is happening all across America. We have to make connections between these places. And we have to, this is now people are starting to see that the real issue is, it's, you know, not how we move from coal to gas or oil to gas, but how do we get off of fossil fuels altogether?
All right. And that is Josh Fox. He's the creator of the Oscar-nominated documentary Gasland and the soon-to-be-released sequel Gasland Part 2. And we'll get to some of those questions that Josh just raised in the second part of our show. You can find a list of all of the local screenings in Monterey, Stanford, Oakland, and Santa Cruz at yourcallradio.org. And we have a full bank of callers that I want to get to. I'm Holly Kernan. This is Your Call. And we'll be right back after this short break.
There are many ways to take part in this conversation on today's Your Call, on the phone, via email, or on our website, yourcallradio.org. The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or leave an email question or comment at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We were just listening to some banjo by Josh Fox, who's our guest today on Your Call. He is the filmmaker of Gasland and the new sequel, Gasland Part 2. And we're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll ask, what can we learn from people who successfully fought for open space in Northern California? We'll highlight the film Rebels with a Cause, which will screen during the Green Film Festival. Friday is our media weekly roundtable where we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. And today, we're talking to Josh Fox, who's the maker of Gasland, about hydraulic fracking, and Josh has made a sequel to that first film called Gasland Part 2, which explores how the fracking industry has changed people's lives, how government is responding, and how he considers it a threat to democracy. We have a full bank of calls that I want to get to. I'll give out the number for others to join us in just a minute. Tomorrow, there is Californians Against Fracking are launching a statewide campaign to pressure Governor Jerry Brown to ban fracking in California. That's taking place at Governor Brown's office in the state capitol tomorrow at noon. All of that information, along with the screenings of Josh Fox's new film, are at yourcallradio.org. And Josh, I want to get to the many people who are trying to talk with you, but very briefly, can you just give us one quick success story so we can get some of that inspiration that you've been talking about?
Well, the saying goes, environmentalists only ever get temporary victories. But in New York, the whole state of New York is a huge success story. 5 years ago, we were told that fracking was a done deal, that you're never going to be able to stop it, and it was going to take over the state. And starting with the New York City watershed and the Delaware River Basin and spreading across the state, people got mobilized and organized. We had luck, which is that the New York State had decided to do an environmental impact study, and that created an enormous amount of activism. We've never seen participation like this on an environmental issue in New York State. And people have successfully fought that industry off by pursuing a hard line, by saying, no, we want to ban it. Basically, the way this breaks down is whether or not your government's going to look at a ban or look at regulations that would so make this practice safe in some way. What I've seen is the states that have gone down the road of a regulatory approach have been destroyed, and there's no way for them to compete with the rapid expansion of the natural gas industry. The only way to actually keep this out of your community and make it, you know, safe for people is to ban it. And the ban fracking strategy has worked, much to my surprise, in New York State, because the people got organized and fought off the industry and made it clear to Governor first Patterson and then Governor Andrew Cuomo that this is not something that people are willing to have in their backyard.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan with Josh Fox, who is the director and producer of Gasland Part 2 and his first feature film, Gasland. And let's go to Harvey in Berkeley. Hi, Harvey. Welcome to Your Call. Harvey, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Harvey.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on.
Can you hear me? Okay. Thanks,
yeah.
Thanks, Holly, and thanks, Josh, for what you've done. You're great. And I want to make two points here. One is that I have an article in front of me that says, German brewers demand moratorium on fracking to protect purity of their beer. They're approaching the Association of German Brewers approached German Prime Minister Angela Merkel, said they want a moratorium on fracking. Turns out that since 1516, they've had purity laws, and they're afraid that the fracking will endanger the wells in more than half of Germany's breweries. And so they don't want benzene in their beer, essentially.
And, good slogan, right? No benzene in the beer.
No benzene in the beer.
I don't know how that translates in German.
And secondly, here they want to frack the Monterey Shale. Well, the USGS and the U.S. Army has told us that fracking causes earthquakes, and it turns out that fracking lubricates the fault lines. Well, you know, they always tell us that the big ones come, and the big ones, a megathrust earthquake, 0.9 on the Richter scale or greater, like what happened in Fukushima. Well, if fracking lubricates the fault lines, and the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant is only built for a 7.5 shaker, then fracking could trigger the big one, which would create a nuclear meltdown. So fracking could create a nuclear meltdown in California, which would go back, the smoke would go back into the Central Valley, the radioactive toxins, and all the water, all the food from the Central Valley would become radioactive. It could be the end of California. Fracking could kill California.
Hey, Harvey, so I just want to take it down a notch here. Is there a danger in that kind of sky is falling rhetoric? I mean, the data that we have, the scientific data already, is so troubling that it strike me that a moratorium until there is more studies on what's actually happening. But I don't know if saying that this is going to be the end of California is too alarmist.
Well, can I weigh in on just from the scientific perspective here? First of all, the don't frack my beer, or there was a don't frack my beer, bro. You know, there was like, this was happening in New York too. The Brooklyn Brewery, weighed in. And in California, the Monterey Shale is over the central, is under the Central Valley and a lot of other places. So it is the center of your produce. And I was talking to a journalist from Monterey the other day who was talking about all the lettuce production and all the that pertains. It's not just beer, but it's water. But you're also, it's the center of agriculture for the state. So, yes, that is in direct competition with multinational oil companies. It's lettuce versus Exxon. You know, so that's very clear. And if Germans rally around their beer, then it's very smart for the beer makers to come in and say, look, this is a huge threat. Don't frack our beer. And I would say the same thing in California. Don't frack our produce. Don't frack our almonds. Don't frack our lettuce.
Are there other global responses that we should be aware of, Josh?
What's that?
Are there other global responses? Are there models that the U.S. could be learning by?
Hundreds. Once you start to get into this, absolutely, you know, I mean, we've seen, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that it's not just 32 states in the United States. This is happening in 30 countries worldwide. So you're seeing a worldwide anti-fracking movement spring up. The Goldman Prize winner just this year, the great environmental prize, was the lead fracktivist in South Africa, who was campaigning to protect this whole central region of South Africa that is potentially being opened up to Shell and to other oil companies. You're seeing that happening in France and the UK. You're seeing it happening in all these places throughout America and in Canada. Australia has the Lock the Gate campaign. Farmers in Australia who don't own their mineral rights, all the mineral rights are owned by the state in Australia. These farmers were being invaded by this oil industry and the gas industry, and they created a campaign called Lock the Gate, in which they did blockades of their own roads, of their own farms, of their own well sites, and committed acts of civil disobedience to keep out the oil companies. And they have successfully protected New South Wales, at least so far as my understanding, but Queensland, which is to the north, which is more an oil and gas protected zone, has still opened up to fracking. So in a way, you have the same kind of split in Australia as you have in New York and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a disaster area. Pennsylvania has opened up its state game lands, its state parks, to fracking. You have fracking wells next to schools, like the high schools in the middle of urban areas and rural areas. The state has basically just sold out to oil and gas. And again, 50th in job creation, according to John Hanger, one of the Democratic candidates for governor in the state of Pennsylvania. So there are those models, but it's really, really simple. You organize. You get your community together and you organize, whether you're campaigning for a statewide ban, which I think is the right thing to do, or local bans. We saw local bans spring up all throughout New York State. New York State's a home rule state. I'm not sure about California. We saw local bans being enacted. The entire city of Pittsburgh banned fracking. They just had a mayoral election, the only Democratic primary, the only candidate that was for the fracking ban in that primary was the winner. So you're seeing people get really fired up and passionate about this idea of banning fracking because it's like enough is enough. You know, we've had 100 years of fossil fuel development, which is to great benefit of our society. Everything that we have is something to do with fossil fuels. But we also have a legacy of contamination, destruction, harm towards workers, harm towards communities, the degradation of our environment as a result of fossil fuel development. And it's time to say, well, you know what, we have new technology. We're going to move on. We don't want to see Governor Brown, who is a progressive governor in one of our leading progressive states, all of a sudden go back to this, you know, 20th century form of fossil fuel development. We can't hand over California, huge areas of California, by the way, And if I were living anywhere in California right now, I would be researching whether or not the Monterey Shale is anywhere near me. Because the Monterey Shale is not just in Monterey. The Monterey
Shale. Well, it's near everybody listening to this broadcast right now, Josh. So, yeah.
Right. So, basically, you know, the strategy that I have seen be successful objectively, and now I have seen, you know, a lot of different techniques here. Where there is no fracking, there should be no fracking. Where there is fracking now, my friends in Wyoming, my friends in Texas, my friends in Colorado, my friends in West Virginia, these people need much, much stricter regulations on the industry because it's already there. And those well sites are contaminating their water supplies. They're contaminating the air. And the air pathway for these chemicals, when you're inhaling, when you've got a well pad next to you, we're finding out within a mile, you have volatile organic compounds. You have the fracking fluids that are volatilizing on the site. You have the cleaning products. In one study that we saw, methylene chloride, which is incredibly toxic. They were washing down the pads with methylene chloride. That methylene chloride was volatilizing, going up into the air and getting into people's houses. That, and you couldn't even smell it. You didn't know it was there. But a chronic low-level exposure to some of these chemicals can cause health effects. So when you're talking about an industry that's carcinogen-dependent, all throughout your landscape or your community, that is going to degrade your property value. It's going to degrade your quality of life. Every well pad requires thousands of truck trips, and those are diesel truck trips. You have trucks running through, huge water trucks to small pickup trucks, thousands. The New York State Environmental Impact Study has this listed at over 5,000 truck trips per well pad. When you're talking about thousands or tens of thousands or even 100,000 wells projected in the Monterey Shale, just do the math. You're talking about increasing traffic and smog and all the things that Californians are fighting against all the time right now by an exponential amount. So, you know, there's no way to understate this. And what the previous caller was saying about earthquakes is absolutely true. The USGS and other agencies have monitored fracking and the injection wells, because they inject the waste back down into the ground, has been seen to cause seismic activity, and that's been happening in Oklahoma and Texas and Arkansas, all the way in the UK. The very first fracked wells that were done in the United Kingdom caused seismic activity, and they were shut down. I went to a town in Arkansas called Guy, Arkansas. They had had 1,000 earthquakes, an earthquake swarm, 1,000 earthquakes in a year, and all these injection wells and fracking wells were all over that landscape. I met a woman who, and most of those were micro.
Josh, I want to get to more
very
calls
small.
Here. Thank
sure.
you, Harvey,
can
for
I
calling.
The earthquake because this
well,
is very,
can you do
small.
It really quickly? Because we have
important.
A lot of people who'd like to talk to you.
Sorry. But in California, to think about fracking on the San Andreas fault line, near the San Andreas fault line, the most famous fault line in the world, this should definitely be raising eyebrows.
And thanks to Harvey for raising those questions for us. Josh Fox is the director and producer of Gasland and the new Gasland Part 2. You're listening to Your Call. Let's go to John in Oakland. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi. First, I'd like to thank Josh for having made these films. It certainly caught my attention. I was just recently visiting some of the fractivists in Boulder County, Colorado. And there, as Josh may know, the county commission commissioners just recently voted not to extend the moratorium on fracking. And they had had that moratorium to study the effects on the roads, but they refused to extend the ban to study the effects on human health, so it shows their values. And I'd like to point out that one of the commissioners, Elise Jones, comes directly from the environmental movement. And so that really shows what, you know, how we can really rely on these big environmental groups, and who, like if you take the Sierra Club, they're getting money directly from, or they were directly from the oil industry. And so that leads me to my final point as far as regulation, and just the fact that all the regulatory bodies are controlled directly by the industries that they're supposed to regulate. That in and of itself proves that it can't be, that fracking cannot be regulated. And then finally, I'd just like to say fracking is growing globally, from Germany to Scotland to South Africa. And I think ultimately we're only fighting a defensive battle if we accept the idea that industry has to be run privately for private profit. And I think ultimately the only way to really win this struggle is to put these industries under the direct democratic control of the people and plan how we're going to produce energy for ourselves and for our society.
All right. Thank you, John. We'll get a response from Josh in just a second. Let's go to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to your call.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to tell Josh Fox his film was terrific. It had huge impact on me. And I also wanted to point out something that you might not have heard yet, and that is that even a leading right-wing economist has attacked fracking on purely economic grounds, purely economic. David Stockman, who engineered Ronald Reagan's whole economic policy in the 80s, has just written a new book called A Great Deformation, and it includes two pages where he analyzes the fracking boom in economic terms, and he calls it a bubble and a, quote, massive overinvestment. So when even the right wing is starting to move our way, I think that's a really good sign that we can beat this thing. And I just want to thank you again for your terrific film.
Thank you
Thank you so much. That's so nice of you to say. And I agree. We can beat this thing. We've seen it happen. And the big question, you know, that the previous caller brought up, this is what I investigated in Gasman 2. Gasman 1 is about air contamination and water contamination and what was happening on the ground. Gasland 2, I really wanted to investigate why regulatory agencies were not protecting Americans. And that was from the state agencies to the federal agency, the EPA. It confused me. I thought, you know, we are living in the United States. We should have protections from these companies. And especially when this film and this movement and the consciousness on this issue exploded across America. I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many times I turned on the news and found that clip of people lighting their water on fire. And it was just, it was there. It's ubiquitous. And yet we've completely failed to fix the problem and make this, fight off this industry, do have an appropriate reaction within government. So, you know, Gasland 2 is about the contamination of our democracy. It's about how every one of those dollars, and they spend a lot of money influencing our regulators at the state level, at the local level, at the federal level, is a toxic material in the democracy, and how our system of government has been handed over in many cases. The Pennsylvania Regulatory Agency is a perfect case in point, and we traced this really quite clearly. The Public Accountability Initiative did a report called Fracking and the Revolving Door in Pennsylvania, in which they concluded that the fracking industry had captured the regulatory bodies that were supposed to protect Americans to a corrupting effect. And that's like a direct quote from their report. And we see this playing out in Gasland 2. And the journey of discovery of that is every bit as shocking and befuddling, confusing, angering as the first film is. And so that's why I was compelled to make a second film. To follow this next thing. And, of course, we follow a lot of the people in Gasland 1 who you love, but you don't need to watch the first one in order to get the second one. You can come in without having seen the first one, although the first one's very easy to watch. It's on Amazon. It's on Netflix. It's easy to find. But if you want to come to one of these screenings, and I would urge people to please come, even just for the conversation that I know that the community is going to have after the film.
And you're going to be playing your banjo at all of those screenings, correct?
That's right. When the guy mentioned Scotland, I play that song. That's on the Barney Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond, which I sort of stole from Steve Martin, his my favorite banjo player. I play it because, the locks in Scotland, these beautiful places, are now up for grabs for the fracking industry. It's all over the world.
All of that information about how to see one of these local screenings of Gasland Part 2 is at yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Holly. It says, the major national environmental group, Environmental Defense Fund, has said that some fracking can be done if done appropriately. Can you speak to that and whether it is realistic to frack with sufficient controls to make it safe for people and the environment?
Environmental Defense Fund has also been pressured to disclose their funding, and they're not doing it. So I suspect that there's a great amount of influence there. In my understanding of this, and I've gone all across America, I've gone and talked to thousands of people, been on thousands of well paths, and done this all over the world, there is no safe fracking. There is no such thing. It doesn't exist. When I just mentioned the truck trips alone, thousands of truck trips per well path, putting that in the middle of the community is a transformation of the community. Also, we know, and this is in Gaslamp too, the science behind the failure of the wells. Why is the water being contaminated? What's actually happening? Well, a gas well is basically a steel pipe surrounded by an inch of cement. That cement is supposed to seal the outer edges of the hole that you stuff the pipe down and fill in all the gaps. And that's supposed to protect your groundwater. That inch of cement that goes around that steel pipe is supposed to maintain integrity for 2 miles all the way down. If you walk outside and you go on the sidewalk, you're going to find concrete, which is actually stronger than cement, and all that stuff has cracks. The industry's own reporting on this says that 5% of these cement casings fail immediately upon drilling, and that the cement deteriorates over time under the pressures that are down there and the changes in temperature, and that 50 to 60% of the cement barriers fail over a 30-year period, which means if you install 100,000 wells over a 30-year period, 50% of them, or 50,000 of them, will be leaking. And that means they're leaking gas. There's a conduit for the fracking chemicals, for all the volatile organics and the other liquids that are down there, for salt, other deleterious things. And there's a conduit for those things to get into groundwater. We know that. The industry knows that. The industry has done their own science and reporting on that, and they cannot solve the problem. There is no current technology that makes an inch of cement impervious for basically forever, because once you've connected those layers, you have created a conduit from layers down in the ground, separated by millions of years of Mother Nature doing its thing or her thing, that has enabled us to have pure groundwater, to not be bathed in, you know, all the things that are down there.
All right, Josh, let me try and get to two more callers.
So there is no safe fracking. There is no safe fracking. From the perspective of water contamination, from the perspective of community impact.
All right, let's go to Denise in Santa Cruz. Hi, Denise. Welcome to your call. Denise, are you still with us? Okay, she suggested. Do we have Denise by chance?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Denise. Thanks. Welcome to your call. She's got a good suggestion. Go ahead.
I have a suggestion that the impact that that one YouTube video, the guy where the guy lit his kitchen water on fire, and the impact that that made, if everyone in the damaged areas, which is a lot of places, just flood the internet with all of their pictures, and or just invite people, start a tour, a summer tour, come and visit what was the once pristine, beautiful rolling hills, and see what it has turned into. And nothing works like, you know, evidence in front of your face.
Which is one thing that Josh's film did. Josh, I'm going to go to one more caller and then get you to respond to both Denise, and we have Richard on the line from Southern California. Hi, Richard. Welcome to your call.
Hi, Holly. How are you?
Fine, thanks. So we're running out of time, so if you could just be really brief. I think you were going to talk about activism.
Yeah. As you know, I've been a contributor to your radio station before, and what I want to say is it's a pleasure to talk to you, Josh. And as a part of the activism against fracking, I just want to say that actually I've been out canvassing with the Environment California, and as part of that action tomorrow, they and I think the Center for Biological Diversity are going to Los Angeles City Hall to present signatures and conduct a rally to the governor's office there, you know. And, you know, the thing that a lot of people know about fracking, but the thing that I've discovered is there are some bills on the governor's desk today, right now, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of the urgency that this issue has in California. I mean, once he signs it, like you say, it's that much harder to stop it, you know.
So, Richard, that is a great way for us to end. Let's have Josh talk about some of those bills and the activism that's going on and what people can actually concretely do to study fracking, look at what's happening, and take action. Go ahead, Josh. You have just 2 minutes left.
Absolutely, and I'll be at that rally in Los Angeles. What you're seeing right now in the California state legislature is that same split that I just mentioned, a regulatory approach that some of these Democrats are taking and a moratorium approach. I think you have to be adamant about campaigning right now for a moratorium, insistent on the fact that California should have a moratorium. All the things that we just discussed today, from earthquakes to water contamination, all those things have to be processed by the state, and the best way to do this is to have no fracking going on and ban fracking right now in the state of California. People have to really campaign for that. And the only way to do that is to get organized and get activated at our screenings throughout the throughout California. We're going to be able to connect citizens with their local groups so they can sign up and be a part of that anti-fracking movement, because you really have to take charge right now.
And Josh, can you briefly respond? Can you respond to Denise as well, her idea? The tours?
Well, Denise's idea is already happening. All you have to do is go on YouTube and look up fracking in Pennsylvania. You'll find thousands and thousands of YouTube videos. So her suggestion, and tours. People in central Pennsylvania have been touring state senators from New York and showing them the ruin. In fact, I just testified in front of the Illinois State Senate, and I asked the state senators had they ever been to a high-density fracking area, and they said no, and they were about to actually start to open up Illinois for fracking. And I said, well, let me invite you and to take a tour of these places wherever you find it convenient, whether that's in Texas or in Wyoming or in Colorado or in Pennsylvania, and I will extend that same invitation to legislators in California who think that this can be regulated. Because I would like to show them exactly what they're doing by opening up these communities to an industry that will outstrip any of these regulations, that there's no way that we can enforce them, that our environmental agencies are weak in the face of multinational oil industries that will want to do whatever they want.
All right. So, thank you so much, Josh. We are out of time. Josh Fox is the creator of the Oscar-nominated documentary Gasland and the soon-to-be-released sequel Gasland Part 2. You can talk with him at one of the local screenings in Monterey, Stanford, Oakland, or Santa Cruz. All of that information is at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. I wish we had had more time, Josh, to keep you on the line and talk to more people.
Well, it was wonderful, and thank you so very much for having me.
Thank you. And please, everybody, all of the information is at yourcallradio.org. You can continue to post comments and put more information there. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. What can we learn from people who successfully fought for open space in Northern California? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the film Rebels with a Cause, which will screen during the San Francisco Green Film Festival. It's about a group of citizens in the 1950s who fought to preserve open space next to big cities. What is important about our wild lands? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. How would our urban areas feel different without wilderness around them? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.